Welcome to our citizens. Thank you for coming. Y'all are doing right. I'm the chairman of the Miramar Restoration Advisory Group. Anyway, so this is Larry Wise, our engineer, our consultant, and Larry has a presentation for us. He'll introduce the people he has with him. What we're here tonight to do is we want public input about the plan that we're going forward. Larry will give you a short synopsis of where we've been, how we got here, where we're going, what our future plans are, and where we move next. So please feel free. I would ask that let Larry and these fine people here make their presentation, and then at the end of that, we have plenty of time left over for public input. Okay? Kay just reminded me that please silence or turn your phones off because Kendall embarrassed himself earlier. But it was a great tune. Anyway, and we'll go from there.
All right.
And just so everybody knows, I am recording the meeting tonight, so that we'll post it on the church website, so that any of the neighbors that could not be here and ask you about it, they'll be able to not only hear, hopefully, the meeting we had before this, that we had a committee meeting earlier today at 4 o'clock, and also the comments and presentation tonight.
Okay, great. Thanks. Thanks, Joe. And I understand there's a big The Voice tonight, so at 8 o'clock. So we're gonna try and get through this quick.
It ends at 9.
At 9. So yeah, 2 hours. That was great. Anyway, if you didn't already, please sign in before you leave. Just part of our efforts are we've got to go through a permitting process, and the more we can document that we've had public participation, the better. So we're trying to keep track of attendance. Introduction, as J.O. said, my name's Larry Wise. I'm a coastal and marine engineer with a firm called Arup, and we've put together a team for this project, which includes Feng Yi, Liu, and John Cutler with a firm called SWA Associates, which is here in Houston. You guys aren't based in Houston, I don't think, but a landscape architecture and planning firm. John's very familiar with the area. He lived as a kid right here in La Porte.
On the weekends.
So he's been around the area quite some time. I've kind of got some personal history and interest in the area. I've been a member at HYC for 15 years approximately, and my kids are two of the kids that are out there every weekend and playing in the rocks and everything else. Dan Geis is with a firm called Fries & Nichols, and they're our environmental consultants on the project, and they're handling the coordination with the Corps of Engineers and other regulatory agencies. All right. So I'm going to start out, this may be a little bit backwards, but I'm going to start out talking about the physical setting of Shore Acres and the shoreline in particular, and then we'll go into what exactly where we're at in this process and what the objectives have been laid out for us in coordination with the advisory committee. Then we're going to talk some about the alternatives for the shoreline protection itself. And then Feng Yi and John are going to talk about some vision for the park as a whole. I do want to state up front, so the focus of the project is the shoreline itself and the protection of the shoreline itself. We wanted to take this as an opportunity to look at the park as a whole and try and look at this as a little bit more holistic approach than just looking at that thin ribbon right along the shoreline. So first I'm going to talk a little bit about topography, and I know everybody who's lived in Shore Acres for more than 5 years is probably already aware, but Shore Acres is really the low point in this stretch of Galveston Bay. This is color-coded topography. The dark reds and white colors are higher, and the yellows and greens are lower elevation. So really along this shoreline stretch, the Miramar Park shoreline is really the low point in this stretch between Red Bluff and Morgan's Point. So as you're all aware from Hurricane Ike, that means Shore Acres really takes the brunt of it in a storm. Zooming in a little bit closer to along the shoreline, the elevations along the shoreline here vary a little bit from 7, 8, maybe up to 9 in a few spots along the two ends. And it's lowest in the middle, so it really, again, is that bowl effect. And then we've got the bayou here nominally draining back towards the south and west, although I understand just depending on the way the tide runs, sometimes it goes one way, sometimes it goes the other way. But the key is in a storm surge condition, there's a lot of water over top of that shoreline. So how did we get to the point where we are? And John's got a great slide later on in the presentation that shows a picture taken along this shoreline in the 1920s. And it seems to imply that elevations back then looked a lot higher than they do now. And indeed, the data from the Harris County Subsidence District shows that this area subsided somewhere between 7 and 8 feet between the turn of the century and I guess the more recent turn of the century. So as you can imagine, that has a pretty big effect on the shoreline. So when people talk about sea level rise, Harris County, we've already experienced our share of it already. The erosion history, we had, and this actually goes back to the 2004 report, and I've stolen from slightly, although I was the author on that, so I don't feel too guilty about that. But we went back and looked at some of the old navigation charts and other maps and tried to map where that shoreline was. And it indicates that potentially, 100 years ago, maybe it was much further out than it is now. I will say from the more recent stuff from the 1960s and 70s on, all the shorelines appear to be right about where they are now. So I think the bottom line is potentially there was a significant amount of erosion sometime during the 20th century, and we'll probably continue to say that because it helps to give some impetus to get some grant funding for this. But in all actuality, probably over the last 40 years or so, the shoreline has been pretty stable with the concrete rubble debris that's been placed there. Although on an episodic basis, when I hit, that debris wound up on the wrong side of the road. So it's obviously not an effective structure, although it has handled the day-to-day erosion with repairs during storms. So just want to talk a little bit about the storm surge conditions. This is an extract from the new flood insurance study that FEMA's made preliminary now, so it means this hasn't gone into effect yet, but it will be going into effect. It shows that these are the annual percentage chance, so a 10% annual chance storm means essentially it's going to happen every 10 years. A 2% chance storm means it's going to happen every 50 years. 1% is 100 years. So you can see these are some pretty high elevations. This is indicating that even every about 10 years, we would expect that the water is going to be up to and above the crest of that land that's there now. Now that said, in my knowledge, the overtopping events have been not quite as frequent as every 10 years. I mean, I've been pretty familiar with the area for 20 years, and I only can think of once that it's happened. So I am slightly skeptical. These do seem a slightly conservative numbers. This is an extract from the new flood insurance study, just again showing these are what they call the base flood elevation. So this is the water level plus the height of the waves on top of that. So this is basically the height elevation at the top of the wave crest. But along the shore here, it's showing in the order of 16 and 17 feet. So as you're all aware, it's up there. So our structure in these kind of conditions is going to be submerged significantly. So really, we're not going to have very much effect on these 100-year type storm surge events in terms of minimizing those waves and minimizing any impacts on adjacent properties. Okay, so that's the setting of where we're at. Just to give you an overview of what's going on the project, we have been hired by the city. The city obtained a grant through the what's called the Coastal Impact Assistance Program. That is ultimately federal money that's tied to offshore oil production and has come back to the states to use for various types of grants such as this. What we've been scoped with is to develop a consensus-based plan for the shoreline. Again, the focus is primarily on the erosion issues and the direct shoreline, but we've sort of expanded the definition of that a little bit, and we're trying to also integrate the park as a whole so that we can address this in a more holistic manner and wind up with something that meets more than just the functional requirements along the shoreline. So we will develop the design and obtain the permits primarily through the Corps of Engineers needed to do construction. And then we'll also develop the plans and specifications for the construction. So this is a bit of a gated process. We're going to do the preliminary design now, working with the community in this workshop and a couple others. And then we'll submit the permit applications. The Corps of Engineers is notoriously slow to get a permit from. It will take minimum 6 months, probably more likely 9 to 12 months. During that process, the design will be kind of put on a slow bell for a while. And once we are through that process to the point where we know that we've addressed the major issues that might come up, then we'll go ahead and finalize the design and put together the plans and specifications for it. Construction is not included in this amount of money funding at present. So the funding, the construction funding will need to be sought out by the city through other grants. And to some extent, we'll help identify those and work with the city to identify those. So, but primarily, it's really going to be the citizens and council members, et cetera, that are going to need to carry this forward and go seek those grants. The work includes the shore protection. We also have some potential to involve some environmental restoration, and I'll talk about that a little bit more. And as I've mentioned a couple times, planning for the park as a whole. Next point is, at the end of this process, over the next 6 weeks or so, we will take this finalized concept design to City Council to get City Council approval. So what we're trying to do is make sure that we've got a consensus among everybody before we go into the permit process. And we really can't afford to restart the design process. We don't have time or budget to do that. So we're trying to get everybody's input up front. And then lastly, as part of the public, part of the Corps of Engineers permit process, there will be another public notice period that will probably go out to most, if not all, of the community. So there will be another opportunity even after all of this for people to say their two cents if they have some issues. So we met with the committee, the advisory committee, last month and had a very good discussion, long discussion about what exactly was it that this project was desired to address. So the takeaways from that, we understood that first and foremost, protecting Shell Beach and all the uses of it, the recreational uses of it, and preserving nearshore fishing, boating, swimming, all the other activities, not just right at the shore, but in that, you know, few hundred yards near the shore. So, and thirdly, preserving the views of the bay for both the people who live along that section and also just people who are in the community as a whole. Creating something that's durable, able to withstand at least Ike was the direction we got, probably something in the at least 50 to 100 year design storm type range. Preserving the access and the function for the fishing pier and the boat ramp. So we will make sure that what we do integrates with those. And we may not be able to improve them or fix some of the problems that may be there now, but we'll at least make sure that we're not exacerbating any of those problems. Consider improvements to the park as a whole. We talked a lot about the walking path along there. We also had a lot of discussions about parking. I will say that parking is an ongoing issue, but the direction that we've gotten is there's not a desire to significantly expand any parking that's there. Right now there's three spots sort of almost ad hoc that are there presently. We're not looking to add a 50-car parking lot and bring hundreds of people down here on the weekends. So that much is for sure clear. We had discussion, and I think there was a lot of discussion even before we came into the project about wetlands creation and restoration. That was one of the alternatives from the plan 10 years ago. We were told pretty definitely community's not really interested in that, so we understand that. We are looking at opportunities maybe to integrate some oyster reef habitat along the toe of some structures. And anything that we can add in terms of environmental benefits on this will help in seeking those grant funds later on. There, it's another box you can check off on these grant applications and gives you more points, et cetera. So we are looking for ways to do that without doing something that's not in line with the community's desires. Next point is tying into the properties on both ends. I don't think the property on the south end, the yacht club, is probably going to be that much of an issue, but the property on the north end, we're definitely going to have to tie our structures in with that. So one of the objectives is to make sure we integrate into that in such a way that we don't cause any damage or exacerbate any erosion, etc. And last, as I kind of mentioned before, we talked about, is the intent of this project to mitigate potential damage to the houses on the other side of Miramar, and that's a secondary benefit to the extent there is maybe some benefit there, but it's not one of the primary objectives of the project.
Okay.
We talked about several different alternatives for the shoreline itself. Rock riprap or abutment, so just to make clear distinction here, when we talk about a revetment is just basically any slope that's armored. When I talk about rock riprap, this is limestone boulders. They're quite sizable, they're heavy, they're designed for the wave climate there, as opposed to the concrete riprap that's there now, which is basically construction debris that's thrown out there on an ad hoc basis without any real design to it. So rock riprap is it's durable, it's easy to repair. If there is damage, you basically can add more rock to it, and it's a reasonably economical solution. On the disadvantages, it's not really a walkable surface. People do it, I've done it hundreds of times, but it's not really advisable. It's somewhat non-uniform, it is a rocky kind of surface. The rock may be truck hauled into the site, so there may be some traffic issues during construction, and it is somewhat difficult to remove any trash and debris. You have to go down by hand and pick stuff off the rock. So concrete rubble, I personally would not advise, but I did want to keep on the list here because it is part of what you see off in this area. The big pro for it is it's inexpensive, and I think that's probably why you see it so much, but it's not durable. There's lots of dangerous rebar sticking out over time. It's not walkable. It's unsightly, and again, it's very difficult to remove any debris, trash. We talked about beach nourishment. Some of the pros, that's basically adding sand to augment the beach or create a new beach. Pros would be there's shore access, and at least in some people's minds, it's more scenic. It is, on the cons, relatively expensive. It would require some type of groins or breakwaters or something to hold it into place, and would have large maintenance requirements and also probably attract crowds. So I'll just give you a preview. The shore beach nourishment is not really going anywhere in the alternatives analysis here. We talked about concrete mattresses, and I've got some pictures to show of these. But you see these a lot in this area. They're concrete blocks. They're kind of a lot like paver blocks that are cabled together and placed in mats. They're very quick to install. They're reasonably inexpensive. They're kind of on the same order as rock riprap. They give you a very nice uniform appearance initially, at least. And you can actually walk down on them to get down to the shoreline. The problem is, over time, they're very susceptible to any settlement or scour, and they become uneven over time. Once they do become damaged, they're very next to impossible to repair. You basically just have to pull them out and replace them wholesale. And also, they're not really suited when you start to get waves above about 5 to 6 feet, which is about the kind of wave climate that we're looking at here for, you know, this 50 to 100-year storm surge. We discussed wetlands creation and recreation. You know, it has some ecological benefits, and again, scenic, of course, depends on the eye of the beholder. But it would require breakwater structures because of the wave environment in the area, and it would block access for a lot of other shore uses. And again, another preview, wetland creation is not going anywhere either. And then last are concrete or sheet pile, various alternatives for seawalls or bulkheads. So this is more of a large, massive structure. The pros, it gives you a very nice uniform, you know, straight line sort of appearance, and it puts you right up against the edge of the water. So, you know, there's no slope. It's, you're right there at the water. But on the cons, there's access restrictions. It's hard to get down to the bottom. You'd have to build some other structures. Moderately high cost, depending on the design, and some maintenance, particularly the steel sheet piles, corrode over time. So you can do an initial epoxy coating, but over time you're going to have some deterioration, corrosion issues. Again, it can be designed for, you know, a 25 to 50 year design life, but it requires some extra attention. Just a couple of sections to give you an idea of what these will look like, and Feng Yi and John have some slides in a minute. They're more kind of architectural renderings, but a rock riprap revetment. We're talking large stones. These would be about 2.5 foot boulders, on the order of about 1 ton to 1.5 tons a piece. So these are big rocks. They're a lot bigger than the concrete slabs that are out there. And they're designed to withstand the type of wave climate that we would expect here. So there's an armor layer underneath there. There is an under layer of smaller rocks, a bedding layer. And then underneath that is a geotextile fabric. So we would cut the slope or potentially fill a slope out to this and then place this rock on top of it. Just to show here, that this line here is supposed to be the low tide line. So we're probably going to be somewhere in the order of 1 to 2 feet below that. So that means when you get the blue norther come through, we'll probably be exposed. So you see this toe out here. But under normal conditions, you won't. You'll just see the edge of the, you know, the water will be right here. But this area here below the low tide line, and even somewhat up to the high tide line here, this is an area that we may be able to colonize with some oysters. Which again brings some environmental benefits. It's not really much of an added cost, as you're probably aware. In this part of the bay, oysters are going to grow on anything eventually that's out there. So it's again maybe a good way to help bring some, check another one or two of those boxes on the grant application. This is just an example of a rock revetment. This is actually a call a weir section. It's a lowered section, but you can see the revetment on either side. And here's these are probably a little bit smaller than the rock we would have at Shore Acres based on the preliminary calcs I've done. These are the concrete mats. What I wanted to point out here, if I went back, you'd see the rock section, we're probably in the order of about 45 to 50 foot total width of that structure, which is not too dissimilar from what's out there now, the amount of space taken up by that concrete rubble riprap. A block mat we would have to cut very flat, like a 10 to 1 slope. So that would eat up a lot more real estate in the park on the order of about 100 feet. And I'll just show. Here's a mat that was, I think at the time of this picture, it was about 15 to 20 years old. You can see you got a lot of settlement issues, probably some scour underneath. I will say this was down in Texas City. They were pushing barges up on here all the time. So some of those indentations are probably from barges, but you know, over time you get a lot of unevenness and you get vegetation growing up through it and stuff. So, they, like I said, they look very pretty at first, but if not taken care of well, they wind up like that. Last, seawalls and bulkheads. There's a number of different types of alternatives on this. I've just sketched up a steel sheet pile bulkhead, which is what you see most typically. This works by, you have what we call a deadman, another section of sheet pile back here that anchors the wall, holds it in place with tie rods in between. So that means you basically have to excavate this whole area, something like 50 feet down to install those tie rods and then fill it back and revegetate and everything. The advantage here is you wind up, you know, you're right at the water's edge. But again, as I mentioned before, especially for the steel sheet pile with corrosion issues, there's ongoing maintenance, and you can epoxy coat initially, and that epoxy coating eventually is going to wear off, and it's hard to replace. This is not a steel sheet pile. This is actually a concrete, poured concrete section. This is down in Palacios, but this is kind of the similar scale of what we would be looking at, you know, a small shoreline area in front and a concrete section above. So. Okay, and where I expected to be in this process at the point of this meeting was that we would still be talking about all these alternatives and gathering a lot of input. What we understood from the committee was there's really already a lot of consensus developed, so we've gone ahead and laid out what we understand is the preferred alternative here, which is preserving Shell Beach, potentially extending it on the order of 50 to 100 feet. Definitely not desired to make Shell Beach, you know, a massive beach like we have here in LaPorte. The remainder of the shoreline, a rock riprap revetment, all the way up to the north end. Again, not doing anything that's going to harm or affect the boat ramp and the fishing pier. And then potentially integrating some of the oyster reef habitat at the toe of the structure like we discussed earlier. So with all that said, I'm going to turn over now to John and Fang Yi to talk a little bit more about the park as a whole. One button for that.
We can go through them faster if you do the slides. As Larry said, my family and I, we started coming to the Upper Galveston Bay in LaPorte in 1959, the Houston Yacht Club, and we bought a home at 214 Sylvan, and we owned that from 1966 to 1993. Kind of wish I had it back now. But so I've been through Carla, Alicia, Ike, and all the ones in between. I-46, the new 146 is here on the left. It's an aerial of Shore Acres, of Broadway, old 146, the Yacht Club, and our project area. Obviously, Miramar Beach is right there. Next one. I was telling folks earlier today, before I was a landscape architect, I was a history major. And it's always, I found it very important to kind of look back and to understand the community. You need to kind of look back at its history. City of Shore Acres was platted in January of 1925. The landscape architect was George Kessler from Kansas City, Missouri. He's also the landscape architect that did the master plan for Herman Park, and other. And he traveled across the country by train. I was a significant landscape architect, and I saw the site plan. This is actually at the Texas Room in the library in Houston. But I saw the plan at a national ASLA meeting in Kansas City, and I recognized the site plan that being Shore Acres, but I didn't know George Kessler had actually designed it. The golf course was going to be over here on the west side, and our project is down on the left, on the right side here, and Shore Acres Boulevard obviously comes down to the hotel site, which is the circle. It's not a hotel site anymore. Next slide. And these are some. This is an image, and this other is an earlier image also. On the reverse side of this document, and there's two of them, laminated down at the Texas Room. But you can see the bluff, and you see the people down here on the shore and this big tree trunk. As Larry mentioned, the subsidence, and the bluff was significantly higher and more significant than it is now, but we still have a significant amount of grade change there. A 1930s aerial, the Yacht Club was established here about 1926. Shore Acres Boulevard, the Circle, and our project area right there. You can see the natural vegetation, and the pines and the mixed hardwood forest is back here. And basically, as lots of Harris County, the coastal prairie, there really were no trees. The interesting thing, and one of the sort of iconic identity elements for Shore Acres, is the tree line, the Canary Island Palms, that line Shore Acres Boulevard from Broadway, and actually kind of wrap their remnants of it, they wrap around the circle. You don't really see them in this 1930 aerial, so I'm not sure when those were planted, it's something I want you to kind of keep in mind when we talk about park design and some other thoughts about how, some other thoughts beyond just the shoreline of some ideas that we have. What's next? Certainly the new entry sign, I mean, I think it's wonderful. The boulevard, the four-lane boulevard with the median, and we've lost a lot of trees, certainly in Ike, and we lost a lot of houses, too. There's an opportunity here to sort of build on the image of the park and the image of the city of Shore Acres that we'll talk about later in the presentation. This is these are Google photos, but we can see the Canary Island Pines. There are gaps, and there's opportunities there we'll talk about.